We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 229. We just finished watching Severino absolutely eat the Astros alive. What a performance.
You know, it's awesome when you can actually count on a guy coming out every fifth day and dominating the opponent. And that's exactly what Severino's did. We've really only seen one bad start from him. Right. And, you know, coming out against the Astros, especially after what happened the night before, you know the Astros were motivated to come out there and win that game, and didn't happen.
It was huge start all around. We're going to get into everything for Severino. It's been an amazing series, I think. You know, first of all, the games are moving quickly, which you don't really realize until you start watching three-hour games. You're like, oh, crap, 3 hours and 40 minutes is a long time for games. So the games are moving quickly. They're well-pitched. They're well-played. And you'll hear we have Brian Hoke on this episode on the second half here. We were talking about sort of the atmosphere and the competition between these two teams, almost like it was just an extension of the ALCS.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. They know. These two teams know exactly who the other guy is. There's nobody taking anybody for granted or taking them lightly or, you know, looking forward to other series. Like, this is the one that's circled on the calendar now. And these two teams are going to be going back and forth forever. I mean, it was such a good ALCS, and it was so, you know, well fought and hardly fought that these guys know that they just can't slip up because the other team's going to win. And they want to beat the team so badly now. You could tell. You could just see it. They don't like each other in the sense that they need to win. I don't think there's really animosity yet, or maybe a little bit, but not crazy amount. But you
well,
definitely see motivation
tough.
To win.
Yeah, it's tough when you're to gain a lot of animosity when the team's not in your own division.
Yeah, I mean,
because
playoffs can
see
do
them
that
twice a year. The playoffs can do it.
Absolutely,
yes.
Playoffs can do that. But I don't think really anything was, was animosity building for the
right.
long term.
And I think everybody realizes that one way or the other, the Yankees are going to have to go through some sort of combination of Cleveland, the Red Sox, and Houston. It's like we know kind of already where the four teams are going to end up. Because they're clear-cut, in a way, the best teams in the American League right now.
And guess who's on this stretch of baseball for the Yankees? Those exact teams.
Right, right. Yeah, it's kind of funny how that's working out. Before we get into everything, though, just want to mention, so, as I said, Brian Hoke, on the second half of this episode, he gave us three signed copies of his book, The Baby Bombers, that we're going to be giving away on social media. So, if you want to enter these contests, make sure to keep a lookout on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You need to be following us on all of those, and you also need to be following Brian on all of those. And then on Twitter, you're going to need to retweet the tweet that goes up to enter the contest. On Instagram, you're going to need to comment and tag a friend. And then on Facebook, you're going to need to do the same. You're going to need to comment, tag a friend, and share it on Facebook. And we will be picking a winner on the next Monday's show. So we're going to be recording that Sunday night, and we will announce the winner on Monday's show.
Yes, you and Dom will be doing that one. I will be missing this next show. It's the first one I've missed in a long time. And it's because I'm going to be taking my life into other people's hands in New Orleans for...
I'm a little worried, man.
You're worried for a bachelor party. I got another guy friend who hasn't gotten married yet. I thought my brother was the last one, but no, it's not. There's more on the list, unfortunately. And yeah, so I'll be in New Orleans with my college friends, which is not good.
Have you been to New Orleans before?
Yeah, I was there on my honeymoon, so a little different. We went on a cruise and we left from New Orleans, so it was we didn't really get to see New Orleans too much because my wife was sick on the way there and I was sick on the way back, so neither one of us were able to like go out, and like having a stomach bug in New Orleans is probably the last place you want to have a stomach bug because there's really not much you can find that's bland, you know what I mean, like that you want to just that can help you pass it. So.
Well, something tells me that your experience
different.
On a bachelor party will be slightly different than your experience on a honeymoon.
Might be a little different.
Going into this Houston series, it was strength against strength. The Yankees came in with the top leading offense. They led in runs, homers, and OPS. Houston was the top leading pitching staff. they led in ERA, strikeouts, and whip. And so far, offense has not really showed up for either side. The Yankees pitching, whether it was Sonny Gray on Monday, who lost the game, but he did look a lot better and kept the Yankees in that game, or the bullpen collectively on Tuesday, and then obviously Severino with the complete game performance. The Yankees pitching has absolutely stepped up and allowed the offense to just get enough out of that offense.
Yeah, it's funny that we're you know, commending Sonny Gray for his last start, but when you start looking at the previous starts, I think at this point we're all just looking for some glimmers of hope and just to see him try to turn a corner, kind of like what we were doing with Tanaka last year. And hopefully we're not seeing a lengthy stretch like we did Tanaka, because that was the end of June until he actually started pitching well. But he did look a lot better. You could tell that he seemed to have more confidence. He was throwing the ball. It seemed to, he was hitting corners and being more aggressive with the strike zone. So it was definitely good signs.
And now we've got a personal catcher situation.
I think we do.
No, we definitely do. It's not even a question. I know Boone is trying to downplay it, saying that it's not permanent, but for the foreseeable future, it looks like Romine will be catching Sonny Gray. And here's the quote. He said, when the schedule makes sense, we will try and get Gary Sanchez in. So I don't know. Maybe down the line after the All-Star break, we might see Sanchez catching Sonny Gray again. But this is all assuming, I guess, that Sonny Gray continues to progress, because if he goes out there the next three starts and lays an egg, well, then what the hell is the point of having Romine back there?
Yeah, I mean, and the start before that, Romine was there as well, and he put up another egg. So it's, in his own mind, he claimed that he had progression. And, while there were a few pitches that I saw progress on, it wasn't totally there. So I don't know. I think this is all mental for him, and whatever. At this point, I just don't care anymore about the whole personal catcher situation at this point, because really the priority right now is we need Sonny Gray to get back, get his confidence back, and then they can figure out the catcher situation later. I think it's early enough in the season where if they're doing this, and I don't like it, don't get me wrong, I don't like it. It's annoying, and I think it's unprofessional, to honestly, is what it really is for Sonny Gray, but it's early enough where he needs to fix himself for the longevity and the the success of this team.
Right. And I think, to be honest, I think Boone and the Yankees hate it too, that they have to do this. They tried to avoid this at all costs.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if at all costs, but they don't want it. It's not an ideal situation. Boone's been outspoken about it.
Sonny Gray made it pretty abundantly clear that he rather pitched to Romine. So at that point, if you send Sanchez out there, then it's a huge story. Then it's a big thing. And they weren't going to do that.
Yeah, I guess. It's crazy. I don't know if Sonny Gray has really put up. We haven't really had. He hasn't come out and said, I want to throw to Romine. Obviously, there have been things before that. I mean, he didn't, but he was talking about. The difference starts when you hear him afterwards. When he throws a Romine, he sounds different. But he hasn't come out and said, hey, I need a personal catcher, I need Romine as my catcher. It's not like he's making that a point. The point is just a clear point by the way he's talking, and I'm sure he's having conversations behind the scenes exactly. with Boone and the rest of the guys. So it is what it is right now. It's just, I'm not going to get too concerned about it, because at the end of the day, I just want him pitching well. And I think once he's well, once he's doing well, and once he's got more confidence, they can start switching guys around.
So you said he you only saw some glimpses that he looked better
from two starts ago.
Okay, yeah, Monday night he looked like a different pitcher.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
Six innings, four hits, two earned runs, three walks, four strikeouts, but he threw 66% fastballs, which is by far the most he's thrown this season in a start.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that from Tanaka too, right? Maybe Larry Rothschild is taking a gander at his game plan, because that was the guy that was that was really behind all of the high percentage of curveballs and breaking pitches in general. I think we're seeing a change in philosophy overall for a lot of these guys. I mean, you're look at all the pitchers now. Even CeCe, can, when he throws it, he can locate it, but he is primarily off speed. He's a different animal just because of the way he pitches, but you're seeing an uptick, at least from last year, with the fastball.
Yeah, and Sonny Gray was using his fastball differently. It wasn't just that he was throwing it, he was actually throwing it up in the zone. It had movement. It was 92-93, but honestly, it felt like it was playing faster to the Astros hitters because they didn't have a lot of good swings off of it. And he worked out of jams, which is also something he was unable to do earlier in the season. And I don't know about you, but do you remember in the first inning he balked?
Yes.
And I'm like, oh God, here we go.
Yes.
Like the wheels are coming off the train in the first inning. Are you kidding me? But he got his shit together and he plowed forward, which was nice to see.
It's nice to see. We're coming from such a low bar at this point.
Right,
Yeah. That we're praising a guy for, you know, having a little flinch, because it was a balk. If you look at the rule, you can't do that. And it was a bonehead move on his part too. I mean, yeah, it was very minor and it really didn't affect the runner, but it, by the rule, that's a balk. So look, I just need him to be right, because the fastball, you're talking about how the fastball was 91 to 93 and it looked more, looked faster than that. And that's kind of the whole point. If you're locating that fastball and then you're mixing in the rest of the breaking pitches, your fastball is going to jump on the guys a lot more because of the way that he can mix up those pitches. And unfortunately, when he's bad, that fastball becomes less of a weapon, as do the rest of the pitches, because you're not throwing them for strikes. So they have to work off of each other. We've talked about this 100 times. They got to work off of each other.
Yeah, and it was just unfortunate that Charlie Morton somehow increased his fastball by 6 miles an hour and had the filthiest slurve you've ever seen.
He just started throwing harder when he got to Houston. That's it. I just started throwing harder.
As
that.
What do you think about crazy Trevor Bauer or Tyler Bauer calling out the Astros?
Trevor Bauer, you had it right the first time.
No, I know, but I called it Tyler because that's what Bregman called him on Twitter.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Bregman's an ass.
Bauer actually now, if you look at his Twitter profile, has Trevor quote Tyler Bauer as his name.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
One, I like the fact that they're going back and forth. I said this on Twitter, is that someone sent me that tweet and I love it. You know, I like the openly, calling people out. I mean, he was calling them out for doctoring balls or potentially doctoring balls. Fine. I like bad blood. It's so much better when there's bad blood between people.
I put out a Twitter poll today on Yankees podcast, and I asked, do you care if the Astros are doing something with the ball that is not within the rules? 73% of the people said yes. They want integrity in the game.
Right.
Do you care?
To an extent. If you're doing it and you're not getting caught, then no, because I think a lot of people do that. So
You don't want a Pineda Pintar situation where he bathed himself in Pintar and then went out to the Fenway Park Mound.
I don't want that. I don't want the Clay Buchholz sunscreen where it's right. Just obnoxiously in my face.
In his hair. His hair looks sopping wet when it was like 40 degrees outside.
If you're doing something to the ball, like I think a lot of people are, I think a lot of people use Pintar, then it's not blatantly obvious and you're not showing it, then you know it's kind of part of the game. I think a lot of people would disagree with me on this because it's cheating by the book, but there's also that type of stuff happens in baseball all the time, like all the time. I don't think it's as obvious as people think it is. They may be using something, but when there's all this attention on it, like, are they still gonna do that at that point? I don't know.
Well, I don't know about you, but I didn't notice anything unusual that the starters were doing, either touching their cap or going to their glove a lot or anything like that.
I didn't notice it either. I didn't notice anything that suspected it besides the movement on that breaking ball.
Well, it's the movement, and it's also apparently the spin rate for all of these pitchers. And Gerrit Cole has increased his spin rate dramatically on his fastball. And Gerrit Cole has been the best pitcher in baseball pretty much this year.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him. Good for Gerrit Cole, son of a bitch.
You know who could use some increased spin rate on his fastballs? That's Ken Giles, because Gary Sanchez just broke his ass on Tuesday.
I got to tell you, that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen on television. It was just unbelievable seeing it as he's walking off, just jack himself in the face. And then, the videos afterwards and the GIFs, they're just hilarious, because this guy's never, ever going to live this one down. Like, this is going to be the guy that punched himself in the face for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
And can he take the mouth guard out of his mouth when he talks afterwards? Like, the guy talks like he has a mouth guard in, like, 24/7.
Well, he's probably punched himself in the jaw a few times that he's now has a lisp or something.
It's ridiculous. I can't hear him anymore.
So I understand some closers, sort of like goalies in hockey, they can be a little weird, but he took it too far. And I don't want to say he like outright clocked himself. I think he sold it a little bit. I think he had a little WWE flair on it.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's the optics of the situation. Like you said, the GIF is out there. The videos are out there. And now anytime this guy comes in, to certainly when he faces the Yankees, but when he faces any team, it's just going to be punching it. Like, everyone's just going to be thinking of punching it in his face. Like, yeah. how is he going to move on as a closer? How are you going to live that down?
I don't know how you possibly live something like that down, because now in social media, you can never get rid of these things. They're going to be there forever. And when I you sent me the video of it, and then I slowed it down so that you could see like true impact. And because I felt like the speed of it while you could see, like, it helped show the punch in the face, like it was hard. But when you slow it down, you can see like the movement in the skin, and like, you know, it's got like a ripple effect. It's good stuff. And no, I don't think this guy will ever live it down. I don't know how you could take him seriously.
Do you think this, we actually got this Twitter question. Do you think it's going to be, like the thumbs down situation where the Yankees might turn this into a little rallying cry anytime they get a big hit or a double or something like that, they do a fake punch in the jaw?
So I saw that on Twitter. And as soon as I saw that, genius idea, we should call him out. I don't remember who it was. I'm going to look it up, but it's a genius idea. I think absolutely that should be it. That would be freaking amazing if they did that.
Because what they did was Frazier last year turned thumbs down on its head. It was meant to boo the Yankees, and he turned it into a rallying cry. I guess this is something the Yankees inflicted. Like, Gary Sanchez inflicted so much personal embarrassment on Ken Giles that he was forced to throw a temper tantrum and punch.
Doesn't that make it better? Doesn't that make it better?
It does make it better. I mean, I would absolutely love it if the Yankees started doing this.
I mean, don't you see this as, you know, if they were to do that, it's trolling the Astros the entire season. I think it's brilliant. I think it's absolutely. It was Anthony Simone. Anthony Simone too. Good
nice.
Call.
Yeah, it was a great. It was a great tweet. Great idea. Like I said, I don't know how, if I'm an Astros fan, I feel comfortable with Ken Giles as my closer going forward.
It's purely because he punches himself in the face.
Yeah. That's unacceptable. Like, I do not feel comfortable trusting a one-run lead anywhere with that guy.
Well, I mean, he's been a disaster in big moments before, so it's not like he's out of the woods with his pitching. The other parts are going to come. He still has to throw the ball over the plate and not get smacked out of the ballpark. I mean, the fact that he even threw that pitch to Gary Sanchez is baffling to me.
Yeah, why did the Astros not walk him?
Well, I mean, I heard the explanation afterwards from Hinch, and he was saying, similar to the way that we didn't want to pitch to Smoke with the bases loaded in Toronto, they didn't want to pitch with the bases loaded because there was one out, and you could score one run at that point with an out, and he wanted to avoid that. So I understand that part of it, because you're in the ninth inning, and a one run will probably win the game at that point, or very well win the game. So you got to play for not to get that one run across. So, I mean, I kind of understand what they're saying with that. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, you got to be damn sure you're careful with him. You can't give him any pitches to hit. You got to get him out on your terms, not right. Throw anything that he can do anything with.
And I don't know. I kind of disagree with that, because when it's Gary Sanchez versus Aaron Hicks, I'm facing Aaron Hicks all day, as much as we like Aaron Hicks. But also with one out and the bases loaded, then you get a force play at every base. That it actually might be easier to make some outs in the infield, especially, than when it's second and third.
Yeah, but a fly ball is a run.
But a fly ball is a run regardless.
Right. Well, either way. It's the deal. I know, but my point is that you're trying to get the guy out. You're trying to get the guy out
you don't
by not
walk,
pitching
you don't
to
wanna,
him.
You don't also want to put yourself in a situation where you're forced to throw strikes.
Right. Yeah. It was, first base was open. I understand it. And maybe he just didn't trust Ken Giles to throw strikes. Could have been
maybe.
That too.
And he threw him a cookie slider. I saw the ball. He hit the ball to center field, and I know center field there is massive. So I'm like, all right, if that at least gets the run in. And I saw
it
Springer
just
sprinting back. That thing got out there by a good amount. That hit high up on the brick wall behind there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he didn't have a lot of trust in Giles to throw strikes, because he didn't want to throw the ball where he threw the ball to Gary Sanchez. So he obviously wasn't locating very well. He had a couple of balls that were teed up for Judge and Didi too. So the guy wasn't on his game, obviously. And then he punched himself in the face.
The thing I loved about it is the Yankees absolutely stole that game because Verlander was so filthy.
Yep.
He has been like ridiculously filthy against the Yankees. I mentioned the numbers when I spoke with Hoke, so let me pull them up right now. He has 24 innings against the Yankees as an Astro, 1 run, 35 strikeouts.
It's ridiculous.
It's insane. And I don't know why. I mean, I guess you can second guess them now and say he should have gone out there like Severino did for the complete game. You know, Verlander would like to do that. But I can't imagine that. I mean, they're going to, next time they're in that situation, I think we're not going to see Ken Giles.
Oh, no, absolutely not. You think Justin Verlander's going to give up the ball that time? The next time? I'm surprised he did this time, to tell you the truth. He's one of those guys where, you know, if he says he's good, he's good, right? You don't really question if Justin Verlander says I'm good and I can go into the next inning, especially when he's dealing the way he is. He's one of those guys that you can just rely on to be his own man, if you will. But no, they went in with the closer, and I'm glad they did. By the way, real quick before I forget, did you see the tweet by, I think it was a Letterman, an ex-Letterman writer, said MLB suspends Ken Giles 3 games. For punching Ken Giles in the face.
Yeah. I don't know if I saw his tweet, but I saw that tweet circulated a few times.
There's so many good tweets around this Ken Giles punching himself in the face.
Ken Giles is now the butt of MLB Twitter jokes right now.
Yeah, it's great.
And we have Gary Sanchez to thank for that. So the whole reason the Yankees had to go eight innings out of their bullpen was because Montgomery left after the first inning. After a 7-pitch first inning, you're thinking, great, Monty's off to a great start. But if you looked, his velocity was down. He kind of wiggled his left arm as he walked off. Turns out it's a flexor strain in the elbow. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. He kind of downplayed it after the game, saying it's not going to be serious. But this is like what Boone's quote was, it's not good news, it's not the best news, it's not the worst news. But this is not good news, because if you remember, Caprellian had the same flexor strain back in 2016. And then a few months down the line, he had to have Tommy John surgery. Now, they don't think it's going to lead to Tommy John surgery for Montgomery. But anytime you're dealing with flexor strains in the elbow and this kind of thing, tightness in the elbow, scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's not what you want. But their two pitchers are very different in the way that they throw as well. I mean, Caprellian was just a disaster waiting to happen, especially if you have any kind of thing going on with your elbow. If you're Caprellian in the way he throws, it's like you're toast. Montgomery throws a little bit more over the top, and he supports the elbow a little bit more. So I'm surprised that he had the injury. And if it is just a strain, you know, I really do hope that they can some rest will help it, and it won't go any further than that. But you're right. You don't know. You don't know. As soon as anytime you're dealing with a forearm or the elbow with a pitcher, it's not good news.
Well, he's going to miss about 10 to 12 starts, and Herman is going to take his place immediately. I think he definitely earned it after the way he pitched on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But some other options we might see from Scranton: Josh Rogers, who is a 23-year-old lefty. He was drafted back in 2015, is actually having a really solid year. 3 ERA, 1.13 whip in 5 starts for Scranton. Everyone's going to immediately say, how about Chance Adams? How about Chance Adams? He has not had a good start in Scranton so far. He's got a 5.11 ERA in 5 starts.
Yeah, Chance Adams is the guy that people want to see, I think, but it's just not, he's not locating the ball. I mean, I think he's still struggling with very similar issues with location, and the Yankees are just not comfortable with him, you know, coming up at this point. And Josh Rogers is a guy I think not a lot of people really know about, but it's interesting. Another lefty, which is good. So he would kind of take that spot if he were to come up, if Herman were to struggle at all. But Herman pitched so well after Montgomery went down. In that type of situation, when you have a guy come in like that, like really, really just completely nutted up in that situation, not expecting obviously to come in the second inning and then, you know, going as deep as he did. So it's, you know, like definitely tip of the cap to him. And I'm looking forward to seeing him. I'm not in this situation, but I'm still looking forward to seeing him pitch, because I think he does have some good potential.
I think they're going to give him a few go at it in the rotation.
Oh yeah,
at the very least.
Yeah, I don't think it's a one and done at this point. I think that they're going to slot someone in, because they need. There's nobody else that they can bring up that's a sure thing. I mean, it's not like you can bring somebody else right now and say, oh, for sure he's going to pitch better than Herman.
No,
they don't know that.
AJ Cole who could start, David Hale who could start, but like
AJ Cole got released for a reason.
Right. And then at least we've got Herman with maybe some upside to look forward to.
Yeah. And down the road, I mean, look down the lanes a little bit further. Justice Sheffield has bounced back, I think, after his first ugly start. Maybe had one or two bad starts. He's pitched well, I think, in his most recent starts too. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him, take another jump.
Still double A though for him.
Yeah, I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him start to climb the ladder a bit more. And I'm not saying it would be anything immediate, but pitchers, we've seen them come up from AA before, but it's obviously not ideal.
Yeah, and just a quick note, Rogers is lined up to pitch on Sunday as well, which is Herman and Montgomery's spot anyway, so at least they're lined up if something bad, knock on wood that nothing happens to Herman, but if something bad happens, Rogers could slot in there as well. The bullpen, like I said, it came up huge. Betances has actually kind of sneaky-like been having a solid year. If not for two outings, the one in Toronto where he allowed like 400 stolen bases and the one in Detroit where he allowed like 400 base hits, his ERA would be much better. He struck out 23 batters and only walked 5 in 12 innings. The eye test, though, says he's been shaky. The stats actually say he's been solid.
Well, you know, you see him do well, and then you know, in this last outing, a runner gets on and he yanks a curveball to the backstop again. And you're like, oh, here we go. You know, like the first pitch. I'm like, come on, bro.
He scares the crap out of me with base runners.
Yeah, you have no idea what he's gonna do. And if you have anybody who's you know, anywhere competent on the base path, they're going to be taking bases. If nothing else, they're going to be taking stupid leads and, you know, advance on even to another base on hits. So he's a liability when there's someone on base. There's no doubt. But he has pitched better. He's gotten himself out of situations, and that's what we've seen in the past. When he's good, he can get out of situations because he's so dominant. And it used to be where, you know, base runners didn't bother him as much. He's always been better with a clean inning, but you know, he was a guy that they would bring in at times when there were runners on, and it was never like a huge concern that guy was just going to all of a sudden run every single time.
Yeah. I think you still have to treat him a little delicately because he's obviously still behind Chapman, Chad Green, and Robertson. So he's the fourth right. guy out of the bullpen. Still, I think you need to pick your spots with him. You need to give him clean innings and see what you got. You're not going to bring him in like you feel comfortable bringing in David Robertson with second and third and one out. You don't feel comfortable bringing in Betances in that situation.
Right.
So you just have to manage that going forward.
Well, and also, you know, putting him in positions to succeed at this point is a good thing because we need his confidence up. We know that Dellin Betances can get a little loose between the ears sometimes. And when that does happen, that's, I think, when you start seeing, you know, lack of focus within an outing or, you know, just erratic behavior on the mound as far as where he throws the ball. You know, so when he's rolling, though, and when he's good and feeling good about that curveball and actually locating the fastball, you know, he's dirty and he's one of the best pitchers in one of the best bullpen guys in the league. So he's just got to get his head on right.
So let's gush about Luis Severino, who nutted up big time after the bullpen needed to get 8 innings. He comes out and gives the bullpen a complete day off. It's unbelievable what he was able to do. He threw 110 pitches. He touched 100 miles an hour in the 9th inning, which is that should be illegal to be throwing 100 miles an hour in the 9th inning. Astros hitters were demoralized. They were walking back to the dugout with their head hung low. It was just an unreal performance.
I mean, again, when you're coming out after the game that happened the night before with Gary Sanchez not walking it off, but hitting the devastating home run to the Astros in the 9th inning, you know these guys are coming out motivated and they're going all cylinders and they just had nothing. You just can't do anything when Severino is as good and when he's completely on. You know, he's one of those dominant guys in baseball. And it's just, you know, I think back to 2 years ago when we had no idea what this guy was going to be, and the progression that he's made and the confidence that he shows now is just, it's phenomenal. It really is. And, you know, we have ourselves a bona fide, no doubt ace at the top of our rotation.
Totally. And I'm almost wondering, are we taking him a little bit for granted? Do we not fully appreciate what Severino has been able to do since the start of last year? He leads baseball with 20 starts of one or zero earned runs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think if we didn't break down every single one of his phenomenal numbers every single time, you know, which I think we do, I think we give him a lot of credit. I think a lot of people do appreciate it because, you know, we had Tanaka in Tanaka's first couple of years. He was a very, very good top of the rotation guy. And he was the ace for that for a short term, I'd say. But he's always been, you know, a top flight starter. And when you see what Tanaka was at his peak, I'd say they're very different pitchers in the way that they approach things. But when you see Severino compared to that, it's like Severino just doesn't put a lot of doubt in your mind. He just, when he needs to take care of something, he just goes at it and chops down immediately because he's got that devastating fastball. He's got that devastating, that slider. And when you can dominate with two pitches and then show, a gimmick changeup every once in a while, but really you're dominating on two pitches. I mean, that's a guy that you have a full confidence in, which is a little different.
I would say tonight, I mean, he was just mainly just mowing him down with his fastball. He threw 60 fastballs, averaging 98 miles an hour. He was working fast. He was standing out on the mound like the batters were stepping out. Severino was not even getting off the rubber. He was just staring dead straight like, give me the freaking ball. Let's go. I'm going to blow this past you.
Locked
so,
in.
So, you know, as much as, yes, you're right, Tanaka was numbers-wise a top-of-the-rotation guy, he didn't have that kind of presence on the mound ever.
Well, the presence was never there for sure. And he was, you know, he's such a different pitcher, a different style pitcher that it just doesn't feel the same. I mean, Severino's literally blowing guys away and you know, showing emotion on the mound. And he's just one of those guys that he's a horse and you got confidence behind that guy because, you know, he can blow you away with 100 miles an hour in the ninth inning. Tanaka can't do that. I mean, that's what Justin Verlander did the other day. You saw Verlander throwing high 90s. And he was throwing pure fastballs to Stanton and Stanton couldn't touch it. He finally, hit a ball to right field. I think on Verlander's his last inning or second to last inning, he threw 98 miles an hour, but he was blowing the fastball by guys as well. So I think when these guys are on, you're at their mercy.
And on the other side of it tonight, Stanton finally came up huge. Two home runs off Keuchel. That was the first home run any Yankee has ever hit off Dallas Keuchel, which is just unbelievable how much Keuchel has dominated the Yankees in the past. But he hit the ball to right field, which I thought was like a little line drive off the end of the bat. That goes into the first row of the stands. And then he hits a ball into the short porch in left field, but it was a missile line drive. And then he added an RBI late in the game. So it was four RBIs for Stanton tonight. Does this finally wake him up? Like, how many times have we said that?
I don't know. He's been a guy that flashes so far. That's the kind of the guy we've seen. But I mean, if you look at the numbers at the end, he's still very productive. The lines are there. He's got the home run totals. He's got the
seven
RBIs.
Interesting, actually. Yes, put this up. He has the same number of home runs through this day last year as he.
He started off really slow last year.
Seven home runs, and he hit 59 of them. So.
So we're good. We're on pace.
well, we're good. The rest of the league is fucked.
Yeah, they are. Everybody is screwed because when this lineup is clicking on all cylinders, and it looks like our boy Greg Bird is coming back actually sooner. Well, he's going on the field sooner than we expected. He is. He's doing. You know, he's scheduled for rehab assignments. That's crazy. I was not expecting it to even get. I really thought this was going to play out longer. I really did.
He's not back yet, Scott.
No, I'm talking about just being away from baseball. I'm surprised he's even back to rehab assignments at this point. That's where
you know who's away from baseball even more now is Jacoby Ellsbury, placed on the 60-day DL.
Did you, So you talked to Brian. Did you ask him at all? Did you guys have any discussions about?
I did, and I'm not going to say it on. I'm going to wait so the listeners
teaser
can see. I asked if anyone has seen or heard from Jacoby Ellsbury. And yes. You'll have to hear what Brian Hoke had to say about that.
Yeah. So I wasn't able to get to that conversation, but that was a question that I really wanted to have you ask because I do want to know where has anybody. It's like, where's Waldo? Has anybody seen Jacoby?
Yeah, well, wait and listen and find out.
Nice.
And I also think that Hoke and I deserve some credit for making Stanton bust out of his slump because we spent a solid 5 minutes, you'll hear, talking about how much he struggled.
Yeah, Well, that's exactly how it's supposed to happen. I don't think anybody's going to be mad about it. And I don't think anybody's going to be mad about it. And I mean, look, like we just said, he has flashed. And this is one game. So let's see some – and not to say that this is a guy that has to prove that he, you know, that he's going to get back, because, you know, he's literally the National League reigning MVP. So he's going to be back. But he has been struggling. It's completely fair. He can't hit he hasn't been able to hit a fastball in the last 2 weeks. Really the whole season. I mean, he's really struggled on four-seam fastballs, which to me is mind-boggling.
Yeah, he especially against Verlander, he looked lost. In fairness, everyone looked lost against Verlander, but it was the ugliness of the swings and the amount he was missing the pitches that was really concerning. It was borderline Chris Carter level.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, when he couldn't get that run in or make any contact in the ninth inning, it was extremely frustrating. But we all saw what happened. And it led to somebody punching themselves in the face, so it's all good.
Gary Sanchez had to clean up the garbage in front of him.
Again, yeah, there's a lot of garbage in front of the four hitters.
One quick other thing about when I was talking to Brian, he used the phrase doublethink, which is from the book 1984. I don't know if you ever read that book, Scott.
No, I have not.
All right, anyway, I said, that's a 1985 reference. I got the year... the title of the book wrong. I thought it was 1985, not 1984. So I felt dumb about that. I was trying to sound smart, and I ended up sounding even stupider than I should just shut my mouth whenever I try. And I should never try and sound smart in the future is basically what I'm saying.
No, you shouldn't. You should definitely play it close to the vest. It's the safest way to go. Expectations stay low at that point.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Remember, keep an eye out for the book giveaway that will be running through Sunday. We're going to pick a winner Sunday night and then announce it on Monday's show. Scott, any last words? It might be your last words ever since you're going to New Orleans for a bachelor party.
Yeah, that's what I thought you meant, honestly. no, I just, you know, I hope they can close everything out tomorrow afternoon. That's, to me, a big game, because it would be a series win. I'd say a very convincing big series win if they can win tomorrow, Thursday. So that's a big deal. And, you know, it doesn't get any easier. They keep going. I think they have an off day on Monday, right? That's the first one in a while. So big series coming up this weekend, too.
All right, we'll talk to you guys on Monday.
I'm as free as Andy Dufresne, but standing in the rain after escaping Shawshank, coming out the drain. And these days, you ain't holding me back. I'm flowing these raps. The pain, it ain't a thing when the music in my brain.
Joining the podcast now is Brian Hoke. He's been on a number of times, and he's going to be joining us throughout the season. Brian, how's Houston?
Houston is good. Yeah, the temperatures are warm. Don't have to wear a heavy coat and a jacket when you go to the ballpark, which is nice considering the way things have been in New York. But I hear the weather's warming up. So if that's true, I'm looking forward to getting on that plane and coming back.
It was beautiful in New York this week. It's 88 degrees today on Wednesday in the city.
Sounds good.
Not a cloud in the sky.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
All right.
The last time the Yankees were home, it was frigid. It's been frigid all season in New York for them. How much of a factor do you think that actually played in how they got off to a kind of a rocky start?
Well, I don't think it helped. I think that, both teams obviously had to deal with it, but the Yankees had to deal with it consistently night after night. And it felt like, you know, no matter where they went, they were never able to warm up a little. They started the year up in Toronto. They came home. They went to Detroit and got two games rained out there. Just a lot of bad weather in the early season. And they weren't alone in that regard. You know, that happened to a lot of teams around the league. But I think what you've seen is a little more consistency here. And obviously going 9 in a row, winning 10 out of 11 coming into tonight's action. Team's playing really well, and they're clicking in a lot of different ways. So I think for Yankee fans, there's a lot of reasons to be excited right now.
One thing I've noticed about this team over the last 2 weeks is that they're actually playing better against better competition. Now, they weren't clicking against teams like Miami and Baltimore, but a lot of Yankees fans were pretty nervous going into this stretch. I mean, no off days. I think it was for, 13 days or something like that? And they were playing
18
really good.
In a row.
Okay, there you go, 18 in a row. And they were playing very good teams. But they've actually been playing better now than they have all season.
And what impressed me was, take that Angels series, for example. They won all those games in different ways. You know, they rallied in the Friday night game. Gardner ties it up with a sac fly. Didi hits the go-ahead home run. And in the Saturday game, they blow them out. They score 10 runs in the first two innings and win 11-1 in a laugher. And on Sunday, a really tight pitcher's duel, and they're able to hang on for a 2-1 victory over the Angels. So Yeah, I think what you're seeing is this team can do it in a lot of different ways. It seems like there's a different guy stepping up every day. And, you know, even the guys that they've brought up from the minor leagues to plug in here, like a Gleyber Torres and Miguel Andujar, they're contributing. They're not just here as placeholders. So I think all those things together, it's pretty exciting. You still haven't really caught a hot streak from a Giancarlo Stanton yet either. So when that finally does click, and it will click, I mean, he did not win the National League MVP by accident. I think that's just going to give them a whole nother weapon in the heart of that lineup.
Yeah, right now what we're seeing out of Stanton is he does not seem to – every time I've thought he's going to bust out and turn back into MVP Stanton, he seems to regress a little bit. And in these last couple of games in Houston, he's looked lost at the plate. I mean, I think he struck out – he faced 9 pitches and made 3 outs, 2 of them strikeouts last night at one point, and he's missing a lot of fastballs.
Yeah, it's not a good sign. I think that the timing is clearly off for him. And, you know, I would just say to Yankee fans, you know, I spoke to a couple people with the Marlins who have been around Stanton for a long time in his career. And, yeah, I mean, this happens. This is not uncommon. I think that, you know, clearly we haven't seen Giancarlo Stanton on a day-to-day basis. But when it clicks, and as it did after the All-Star break last year, he just catches fire and he can strap a team onto his back for a long period of time. But he is a streaky hitter up there. I think that he's surrounded with enough guys in the lineup where Gary Sanchez is hitting well. Aaron Judge went into a little bit of a tailspin over the Angel series, but had been hitting well and being really selective. Didi Gregorius, obviously American League Player of the Month for April. I mean, they've got a lot of places they can kind of ride those horses and wait till that one big guy steps in there.
Could you see Boone moving him either down to the 5 spot to get Gary up because he's playing well right now, or even maybe putting Stanton second, moving Judge around to see if we can get some good pitches for Stanton to see?
I feel like Boone would be more likely to move Stanton to the 5 spot than he would be to elevate him to the 2. I think he really likes Judge in the 2 hole just because of his on-base ability. He said that a couple times, how he really wants to stick with Judge in the 2 spot. So he's open to moving Stanton down. He's done it once already. He moved him from 3 to 4. And, you know, if this continues for another, you know, 4, 5, 6 days, you know, maybe that's something he explores. But I think he really wants to get Stanton those at-bats to get him going because, you know, if that's 1 or extra 2 at-bats a series, you know, you want to get that guy up to the plate because when he's going good, like I said, he can really carry you.
How much do you think having to play left field and also DHing a lot more than normal for him has factored into his offense?
He hasn't complained about it, but I think you're probably on the right path there. I think that you know, players are creatures of habit and rhythm, and this is a superstar level player that is used to having that every day, playing for a National League team where there was no DH, where you just, that's it. You go and you look at the lineup and you're out in right field and that's what you're counting on. So I think bouncing around a little bit from DH to right field to left field, I think it's been an adjustment for him, as has playing in a completely new team with a new coaching staff and new teammates. I mean, there's a lot going on here. And he talked about that a little bit. I remember during the series at Fenway Park, he had said that during the first homestand, he kind of had his mind on a few too many things, and he's trying to kind of simplify it and block out some of the noise. And we asked him, what kind of noise are you talking about? He said, nothing to worry about. But I think that clearly there's a lot of moving parts to Giancarlo Stanton, some on the field, some off the field right now. And I think it's just an adjustment process. And we've seen this before with players, especially superstar players, when they come to New York, sometimes it takes a little while.
That's pretty cryptic, what he's talking about there. That sounds interesting.
You know, somebody in the one of the writers in the New York Times did a really good story. I think it was Billy Witz, about how Stanton was trying to find apartment furniture for his apartment that he's splitting with A.G. Ramos of the Mets. And I don't know if I don't know if it has anything to do with his couch or his bed, but I would certainly hope not. I think there's probably some other stuff going on there. And just the whole lifestyle change of Miami versus New York and uprooting your entire life. I think there is something to that.
Can you tell Stanton for me that if he needs somebody to be his assistant to handle his furniture, I can be that person for him? Like, the guy's signed a $300 million contract.
Yeah, there's a long line of people who are probably waiting to help him out. And, you know, this guy's got a pretty big paycheck coming his way, so he probably gives out some pretty good tips, too.
Right. So we're recording before Wednesday's game. The news about Montgomery just sort of broke that he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with a flexor strain in his elbow. just when we thought maybe the Yankees were turning the corner as far as injuries goes and guys were getting back, we saw Frazier rehabbing, we saw Drury rehabbing, Bird is actually doing stuff on a field again, we have this Monty news.
Yeah, it's I hate to pull a Girardiism on you, but it's not what you want. You know, especially with starting pitching being so thin for this team. We talked about that being a concern coming into this year, and knowing that Montgomery's not going to be there for the next 2 months probably, I mean, that is definitely a significant blow for this Yankee team. I think that the good news is they're saying this does not appear to be a precursor to Tommy John surgery. I guess you never completely know that, but at least for the time being, they're thinking that they'll have him back in the middle of the season for the stretch drive, and that'll be a boost to them, I think, if they can get a healthy Jordan Montgomery back in that rotation. But they're going to need him. Domingo Germán's going to step in for now. He pitched really well last night, came in, gave four scoreless, going toe-to-toe with Justin Verlander, really impressive outing. And he's a guy that, you know, you talk to scouts and people around the team, and they've been saying for a while, watch out for this guy, check out this stuff. And everything you've seen so far has lived up to that. So he's going to get a chance. He'll start on Sunday against Cleveland, and I think that he's going to stick in the rotation at least for a few turns until they figure out if they need to do something else there.
Isn't a flexor strain the same thing Caprellian had back in 2016? And I believe the Yankees said the same thing. This is not a precursor to Tommy John. And then we all know what happened to him.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, I've heard that too. And you hate to say it, but that question definitely was asked. And, you know, as of right now, they say it's not. So I think you cross your fingers and hope for the best. But there's certainly no guarantee that it can't turn into that. So and you'd hate to see that considering how impressive Montgomery was in his rookie campaign last year, really pitching a lot of big games for this team. He was a big part of their success in the regular season last year, and still could be down the stretch in the second half this year. We'll see.
Germán definitely earned a spot in the rotation, especially after what he did last night coming in relief in an emergency situation. Do you think, though, this is I believe you just said he could stick in the rotation for the month or two that Montgomery is out. But do you think the Yankees think of him as a long-term solution in the rotation to fill in right now?
I think as of right now, the people that they have on staff, yeah, I think that he would be their first go-to choice. I know that A.J. Cole is here and David Hale is here. Those guys are in the back end of the bullpen, and they have some starting experience. And then you can rattle off the name of guys down in the minor leagues who might be called upon to help out at some point. You know, Josh Rogers, we've talked a lot about Chance Adams, although he hasn't been pitching that well this season. Justice Sheffield has been pitching well, but he's down at double-A ball and he's 21 years old. So who knows if they want to accelerate that. I think that Germán is a guy who has bided his time. He's here. He's on the big league roster. And, you know, if he can pitch anything like he did over those four innings last night, he can get stretched out pretty quickly. I think next time he'll be up to about 80, 85 pitches. After that, you would think he could go a full 100 if he had to. And you know, he could be in pretty good shape. I think he's going to give you a competitive outing. And he really impressed me a lot last night going up against a lineup that was the defending World Series champions.
Yeah, both teams have been pitching unbelievably in this series. It almost has seemed like an extension of the ALCS, games 8 and 9.
I thought that too. I thought that this morning. Just the intensity. The crowds have been a little less than they were the last time the Yankees were here, but I feel like the quality of the games, I mean, the games have been under 3 hours. And man, that outing by Justin Verlander last night, I mean, if that's in October, people are talking about that forever. 14 strikeouts and 105 pitches. That's crazy to me. But the Yankees matched it, and I guess that, you know, if last night's game was in the American League Championship Series, I think that a lot of people would have a Gary Sanchez poster on their wall come a few months from now.
I'm sure you've seen these numbers, but Verlander in his last three starts in Houston against the Yankees, 24 innings, one run allowed, and 35 strikeouts. So he's basically been the best pitcher of all time against the Yankees.
That will play in this league, yeah. So I think that the best news for the Yankees is he burned out 105 pitches, and they're not going to have to see him again before their plane gets off the ground tomorrow.
But it's the same sort of a same thing as last year in the playoffs that we saw, where the starting pitching for Houston is just filthy, and Charlie Morton is now looking like a top of the rotation guy. Gerrit Cole has been unbelievable. I know the Yankees are not going to see him, but then you get into that Houston bullpen, and the Yankees almost stole the game on Monday, and then they did steal the game last night. So I don't know. I still have, if I'm Houston, I'm still questioning my bullpen.
Are you trying to say, Houston, we have a problem?
I didn't want to go there, but at least you did.
I think that it's really interesting how these two teams match up, because the Yankees bullpen is obviously such a huge strength of this team, and their starting rotation is supposed to be a weakness, and then it's almost a flip with Houston. I think that this Houston team, you know, a few people, Aaron Boone has mentioned it, Brett Gardner said it a few days ago too, this Houston team might be better than the one that won the World Series last year. So, I mean, this is a very formidable opponent.
That's scary.
They're going to get a full year out of Verlander. They added Gerrit Cole. But the Yankees made some changes, too. I mean, I think that this Yankee team might be better than the one from 17 as well. Anytime you can add an MVP like Giancarlo Stanton, obviously he hasn't played like one yet, but you're getting contributions from guys like Andujar and Gleyber Torres. I mean, compared to last year's team, would you rather have Andujar and Gleyber Torres, or would you have Starlin Castro and Todd Frazier at third base? I don't know. I think I might go with the 2018 Yankees for that one.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially with the way that we've seen them play. Are you making anything out of this spin rate beef on Twitter between Trevor Bauer and McCullers and the Houston team?
It's fun to keep track of. I think it's certainly been entertaining. But as far as the baseball has already been looking into somehow increasing the tackiness of the ball. So I'm not surprised if that's what it turns out to be. Gosh, we lived through the Michael Pineda thing. And Pineda's explanation back in the day was basically, I'm just trying not to kill anybody. You know, it was a cold night at Fenway Park. He didn't know where the ball was going to go, and he didn't want to hit anybody in the head with it. And I think that's why a lot of the time I know I'm rolling the clock back a few years, but players like David Ortiz were like, that's fine. We don't care. Go ahead and use it. You know, they would rather the pitcher know where it's going when he's throwing 98 miles an hour than have something come into their head and maybe possibly end their career or alter it in some way. So I think that in a lot of ways, it's people outside the game are trying to find something. And look, I mean, there must be a magic potion, a reason that these guys have come to Houston and kind of caught a second gear in their career. But I'm not so sure that bubblegum or tackiness is the reason there. But I'm certainly following along, and it's entertaining to watch. And I think that could we just give credit maybe that they're great pitchers and they're pitching great for right now? Maybe that's the way to go there.
Well, Justin Verlander, absolutely. Gerrit Cole, absolutely. But when Charlie Morton is averaging 93 miles an hour on his fastball in 2015 and he's touching 99 consistently on Monday night, something's up.
Isn't that funny?
It's like, that's not pine tar. That's not bubble gum.
Yeah.
That's not suntan lotion.
Right.
That's something else. I don't know what it is, but that's weird.
I don't think bubble gum would do that. I've chewed a lot of bubble gum in my day, and it's never done anything like that for me, so who knows?
Right. Sonny Gray, though, also looked good. And even though the Yankees lost on Monday night, that was the big takeaway. And I think I know I was happy after Sonny Gray's performance on Monday.
Yeah, and it's something the Yankees were very encouraged about, too. I know it came in a losing effort, but for him to go six strong, especially considering how lost he'd looked at times, to turn in a quality start against this team on the road in this ballpark, I think that was a huge step forward. That's a confidence booster for Sonny Gray. And, I know that Aaron Boone had wanted to stay away from the personal catcher thing, but Sonny has made it pretty clear that he would prefer to pitch to Romine whenever possible going forward. And so I think the Yankees are going to try to accommodate those wishes. And, whether or not it would be Boone's preference to have a personal catcher, at some point you got to not cut off your nose to spite your face. And I think that if that's what's going to get Sonny Gray back on track, and maybe you can revisit the Gary Sanchez thing later in the year, but it almost felt like they were trying to force a round peg into a square hole in a lot of ways. And if it works better with Romine and gets Gray on track, that's hugely important, especially considering the injury to Montgomery and now that the depth has been or will be tested here.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of personal catchers. I chalked it up to the fact that Sonny Gray came over at the trade deadline last year and just didn't have a lot of time to work with Sanchez. And I figured after a full offseason and spring training, they would be able to get on the same page. Clearly, they haven't. But what are your what are your just general feelings on personal catchers?
I don't love it because I think that it kind of hamstrings you in a lot of different ways. You know, now that suddenly means that you can't DH Sanchez on a different day, or you're going to lose his bat on that day. It kind of reduces the number of options that you have. And then, of course, in the postseason, I think that becomes a huge issue as far as you're going to be losing a bat out of your lineup because Romine's going to have to catch. And if they should get that far, and I know we've lived that once already here with Sonny Gray and Austin Romine. So, I don't read a whole lot into the numbers. You know, everybody keeps throwing those numbers back out, myself included, just for the sake of completeness. They are substantially different with Romine and Sanchez behind the plate, a small sample size, of course. But I think that when a pitcher is making it very clear that he and Romine click together, I think you do have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, and it's not that it's I still think Gary Sanchez is a great catcher. And in fact, CeCe Sabathia has given credit to Sanchez for calling great games. And after his performance on Sunday night, credited Gary Sanchez. So I think the ability, I think Sonny Gray and Gary Sanchez could and still should be able to get on the same page.
I would agree with you there, but I think that so much of being a major league pitcher is having confidence and conviction in your pitches. And, you know, we've already seen Sonny's a guy who tends to nibble around the zone and likes to bounce curveballs in the dirt. And if he doesn't have absolute faith that Gary Sanchez is going to block that ball, then he may shy away from it, you know, consciously or subconsciously, and maybe go to a pitch that was a second choice in that situation. I think there's some of that going on. I think there's a lot of thinking going on in Sonny Gray when he's out on the mound, maybe a little too much at times. He can kind of overthink a lot. And I think that the difference he has between Sanchez and Romine is when he has Gary back there, he's probably double thinking or kind of, you know, questioning things a little bit more often. I think with Romine, he has the confidence that he can just see the sign, shake it off, or go with it. And when he goes with it, he's 100% certain that that's the right pitch to throw right there.
Mm-hmm. Double think. You just threw a 1985 reference on us. Sonny Gray used his fastball more in the start, and also Tanaka has been using his fastball more his last two starts, and he's pitched much better. I think that's the biggest key for Tanaka, because we saw him throwing a bunch of off-speed stuff. It was not working, and I know that's the Yankees pitching philosophy in general, but what did you see out of Tanaka his last two times out?
Yeah, I think that that's certainly something that I think there's something very valid there. He's looked pretty good. He really has to me. I think that we know what he can be when everything's right. I think that I've read the same articles you did about the Yankees fastball, you know, kind of shying away from fastballs could be playing an issue with some of their pitchers. I think that one was written about Gray, but with Tanaka, I think that, you know, he is what you expect him to be at this point. And I think that a big part of their success during this stretch run, you know, I know the offense went bonkers over the 9-game winning streak, but the starting pitching has really been there consistently night after night. And I think that as that starting pitching goes, so will the Yankees, because it's really hard to win a lot of games 10-8 in this league.
So the infield situation is going to be dicey when we get Drury back with Andujar and Walker on the roster not performing. I don't think Gleyber Torres is going anywhere. And then eventually you're going to have Bird coming back. So what are they going to do with all these moving parts?
That's a great question. I wish I knew the answer to that. I think that you're going to get Drury back at some point. I don't know how much playing time he's going to get. Will he see some reps at second base? Maybe he could even go back to the outfield. He's got some experience out there. I think that's possible, but Andujar has done nothing wrong at third base. The defense has actually been better than I expected it to be, too. I thought the bat was going to play in this league. Gleyber Torres, I think all around in a small sample size, has impressed me on both sides of the ball. I think he's your second baseman going forward. He's a better defender than I think I gave him credit for. He's very smooth. I don't think they've had a defensive second baseman since Robbie Cano like him. So I've been very impressed with him. And you know, with Bird, as you know, Boone was saying here, he's getting closer to playing in games. He might be a week or 10 days away from playing in games down in Florida. That keeps him on track to be back with the big team. And probably late May, they were talking 6 to 8 weeks after the surgery. So he's getting closer to that. And, you know, and then I guess you figure out what you're going to do. Maybe it's a left-right platoon between Kyler Austin and Greg Bird at first base, because they both deserve to be in the lineup as well. So I think that that's a long way of saying I don't think it sounds like great news for Neil Walker, but I suppose it's still time for him to change their minds too.
And as seems with this team, somebody else might be injured at that point. Seems like it always works out that way.
Isn't that funny? You never know. These problems always seem to take care of themselves, and we go over so many different machinations of the depth chart, and well, if this guy does this and this guy does this, and a spot always seems to open up, you know? So I think that baseball is a game of attrition, and it's never bad to have so many healthy guys on the comeback.
Final thing, speaking of injuries, Ellsbury was moved to the 60-day DL. Is he even with the team? Is he around the team when they're in New York? And also, do you think we ever see him play for the Yankees again?
Ever in life?
Yeah, in life.
No, I have not personally laid eyes on him since spring training. He's been down there in Tampa. I know he did come back to New York for one day. He got a cortisone injection, but I never saw him. He's almost like the forgotten man. He's still got a locker at Yankee Stadium, but I'm not even sure if he's been there. Yeah, I'm not even sure if he's been there. The mail is piling up at it. And he's got a bunch of shoe boxes there, but there's not a whole lot going on. So, I just asked Aaron Boone about him about 15 minutes ago, and there's really not a whole lot to report there. He's been sidelined with these different injuries, and he's doing some batting tee work and some toss, hitting soft toss, but it sounds like he's not even close to getting on the field. So until he starts getting into games and getting those reps, it's really hard to have any kind of realistic timetable. I think he's going to have to go through an entire spring training. He really only played, I think, in four or five games in the spring off the top of my head before the oblique injury. So it's going to be a while. And it's funny, you think back, and there was a time in April where people were saying, well, Ellsbury might be the answer, and maybe he'll come back and take back center field from Aaron Hicks while Hicks is on the DL. And that feels like it was a month ago or 2 months ago, because obviously that did not turn out to be the case. And Ellsbury, maybe after the All-Star break, who knows? I'd just be guessing at this point.
Right. Well, Brian, thanks for joining us, and enjoy the rest of the trip down to Houston.
All right, you got it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.